My next guest is Steve DeRoyan, head of asset allocation models and ETF product at John Hancock Investment Management, who currently offers 15 ETFs, nearly $4.5 billion invested. And actually, yesterday, they celebrated the five-year anniversary of the launch of their ETF lineup. They entered the ETF space back in September 2015. Steve is now on the line with me from just outside Boston. Steve, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks, Nate. Pleasure to talk to you this morning here in Boston. It's great to actually get a chance to talk to you here on the podcast. I haven't done this before.
Well, yeah, you know, surprisingly, even though your ETFs did launch some 5 years ago, for whatever reason, we just haven't had John Hancock on the podcast before. So I'm really excited about this. And I thought a good starting point would be to have you simply describe how you've approached the ETF market overall. I know there's a partnership with Dimensional Fund Advisors, DFA. They're the sub-advisor on the ETFs, all of which take a rules-based approach. Give us a quick intro to John Hancock ETFs.
Yeah, 100%, Nate. So you're right. As you know, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, John Hancock has a heritage as a manager of managers. So we go scour the globe, try to find the best managers in whatever given category or expertise they have. In many cases, it's delivering what I would say institutional-type managers that may be walled off to certain parts of the marketplace, in particular the retail part of the marketplace, and delivering that expertise to the retail market. So 5 years ago, we took the same approach and said, hey, we think this smart beta thing has some legs. We think that there's an opportunity here to deliver what institutions have been talking about, in particular in Europe, much before us here in the States, about this rules-based approach, how we really focus on delivering on a very specific and specialized group of factors. And so we went out and said, all right, who does this and who does it well? And of course, that led us straight to Austin, Texas, to our friends at Dimensional Fund Advisors. And we went ahead and partnered with them 5 years ago and deliver their multi-factor approach in a rules-based ETF. So we focus on the three factors, the three dimensions, as they like to call them, of value or relative price, profitability, and of course size, and we put those into the blender, if you will, and we created an index in conjunction with them, and delivered our first ETF, like you mentioned, just about 5 years ago. I was off yesterday celebrating my wife's birthday, but it was also our birthday as well. So I know where my priorities lie. You know, I had to make sure she was happy first. But so happy to celebrate today on my side with the anniversary. And what we've found over the course of time, of course, is the dimensional approach has a very systematic approach, it's a little bit different than what you might expect from John Hancock. You probably would have expected us to launch an active fund out of the gates. That's our heritage. But what's sort of interesting in the way that we really approach this is because Dimensional's process and approach is so formulaic to begin with, it just really led to an ease of doing business to do it with inside of this smart beta type wrapper. Well, so that's the approach we took.
Yeah, and you mentioned the John Hancock heritage. You know, personally, I've always thought of John Hancock as one of the truly blue-blooded traditional active management shops, right? You have a long established history as an active manager. You mentioned the manager of managers approach. Can you just talk a little bit more about that thought process to go index-based on the ETFs versus traditional active? Was it just that ease?
Yeah, so I think there are probably three particular factors. One I just mentioned, which is it wasn't a stretch, right? We didn't ask Dimensional and they said, oh, we can't do that. It was, oh yeah, we can do that, right? So there was that approach, right, already, that the manager that we selected that we thought would do the best job in this space didn't have any issues with it. That was one. Two, as you know, distribution is such a big part of what we do in the ETF world, and you really struggle to find shops that don't have strong distribution that have had success. It's very difficult to have great distribution, great ETF success without great distribution. So certainly 5 years ago, much less so now, Nate, but 5 years ago, an active ETF was still really a unicorn. you know, and it hadn't had the success. And it's not as though we didn't think it could, but on our first step into the marketplace, we figured, you know what? If we took this active process and put it in a passive implementation, that's okay too. And so what we decided was, if we went with this passive implementation with an active process, and we've got some interesting elements within our index creation process, we call it index memory, where we have flexibility to do things like, if there's a major merger or acquisition, in this case, some sort of major corporate action, we have the ability to restack the deck within our index. So there's some smart elements that we put into the index process with our partners at Dimensional that make for these ETFs to be slightly more quote unquote active than your regular, just beta ETFs. So we think that we've covered off on both bases. You know, and lastly, you know, honestly, the distributors certainly 5 years ago were not as excited to put active ETFs onto their platform. And so we had to take all those things into account. And because our partner was willing and able to do it, because we felt that their process actually worked with inside an indexing process, and it was going to be candidly an easier road to get our ETFs onto platforms, we just thought it was the right decision at the time.
Well, let's highlight a few of the John Hancock ETFs, and then I do want to come back to your overall approach to the ETF market, and we can certainly talk active ETFs. I thought we'd start with one of your most popular ETFs, the John Hancock Multi-Factor Large Cap ETF, ticker symbol JHML. You also offer a mid-cap and a small-cap version of this strategy, along with a developed international and an emerging market version. But take us through JHML.
Yeah, I mean, so what's great, we do offer 15 ETFs. We have, as you mentioned, our core five that you just sort of highlighted. And then we have a lineup of 10 sector ETFs. They all follow the Dimensional process. They're all sub-advised by Dimensional. The index is created by Dimensional as well. So the nice thing is, once you understand our story, you can go ahead and implement it across multiple different segments of the market. Our thought process was, let's cover the core boxes of where we feel that investors need the most coverage. And so we're straight down the middle on large, mid, and small. And then we cover off on developed international and EM. In addition to that, if you want to play something from more of a sector side, 5 years ago, sectors were exploding. They've obviously since slowed down a little bit, Nate. But what we saw with the sector side of the marketplace is our performance has been quite good relative to certainly anybody else in the smart beta space. We have several of our sector funds that are four-star funds at this point, many of which are hitting their five-year just last week, and several others that will be hitting it in March of 2021. We think that this approach is a smart approach, and it all kind of rolls into the following. Diversification is one of the key factors here. As we know, what we've seen in the marketplace over the last several years is this mega cap trend. So having a strategy that focused on small value as two of the three factors hasn't been a home run in the last 5 years. And that's okay, because we're not looking at this as a five-year business. We're looking at this as a 50-year business. And when you look back 50 years in time, what you find is that small cap stocks, smaller cap stocks, value stocks, and stocks that are focused on profitability tend to outperform. So the numbers are in our favor over the long haul. And look, I know when the first fund that Dimensional launched was a small cap fund. The first 8 years, small cap underperformed large cap. And it took that fortitude to stick with that process and say, we know that over the long haul, history's on our side. And we have that same approach here. What's great is that Dimensional has evolved their thought process, and the profitability of what a lot of people would call quality elements that they've added into their process over the last 10 years has really helped to even out the story a little bit more. The story used to be solely small value. The addition of profitability or quality has really made for a what I think is a more, I guess the right word is a more even approach to investing. And that profitability element or dimension has really allowed for, even in a difficult 5 to 10 year time frame for value and size, for that factor to really help pull up the overall portfolios. So we know that the biggest five stocks in the large cap space have driven the market, certainly over the last year and much longer than that, really over the last 5 years. We know that historically that doesn't last forever. And so the approach that we have, where we have larger portfolios that really focus on a diversified approach, not one individual stock really driving the overall performance. We've still, with JHML, been able to hang in there in terms of performance. But when you look at risk-adjusted performance, it's strong. You know, it's a strong performer. When we look at JHMM, which is our mid-cap stock fund, what we find there is that that diversification is being rewarded a little bit more handsomely. So when you compare our mid-cap ETF, which is our a four-star fund, when you compare it to the active universe, that product, you've seen diversification really being rewarded over the last several years more, and that outperformance against beta products has really been much more consistent. And that's what we expect over the long haul. We don't expect that to be every day in time. You know, dimensional, and we believe that these factors will show up. The hard part is we don't know when they're going to show up. So the only way to guarantee that you're participating when they show up is that you're in them all the time. And so that's the approach that we have.
Can you talk more? Does that make sense? It makes perfect sense. One thing I'm curious about, though, can you talk more about the value proposition of the John Hancock Multifactor Mid-Cap ETF? So you mentioned JHMM. This is actually your most popular ETF. And the way that I would frame this is, you mentioned we have a handful of mega cap tech companies that have driven the bulk of performance in the most popular market cap weighted indexes, right, in the large cap space. And they're obviously making up a large and growing chunk of those indexes. And so on the large cap side, everything makes sense. Like, I saw a stat a couple of weeks ago that 91% of large cap multi-factor ETFs have underperformed the broad market this year by an average of over 4%. And that's because those top five or 10 stocks in the market cap weighted indexes have driven the performance. But if we move down to the mid cap space, where that's, you know, theoretically not an issue, what's the value proposition there? Because in the large cap, we can say, yeah, if we play this out over, you know, multi-decades, we know at some point that flips. And you'll be, you know, theoretically be rewarded by using the size and value and profitability factors. But how does that work in the mid-cap space?
Yeah, well, so first and foremost, we think the story in mid-cap is really almost a portfolio construction story. So when you look and talk to advisors, many, many, many of them are underweight mid-cap, right? So the broad market, if you look at, say, the Russell 3, about almost 17% of the market should fit into that mid-cap space. When you talk to the average advisor or the average investor, they only usually have about 12, maybe, you know, somewhere between 10 and 13% allotted to mid-cap. So first and foremost, we think that most investors are underweight mid-cap as a quote-unquote asset class, which we think is a not the best decision. Why we think that's not the best decision is that mid-cap has, over the last 10 years in particular, they've outperformed large cap and small cap. And value, right? So just the mid-cap core has really been an outperformer as an asset class. And I think that really, if you think about the types of companies that live in that space, it actually makes a ton of sense. And it actually follows through with the dimensions that we talk about. And why we think that's important, and it's even maybe more important today than ever with the situation that we're in, is those mid-cap stocks are smaller, so they have more room to grow, right? So that kind of speaks to the small cap element of, or the small beating large element of what we believe in. But what's also interesting is, in this environment, those companies have access to capital. They're likely a little bit more durable, if you will, than your small cap companies that may be struggling during this difficult time. So the access to capital today, we think will, in the long run, really help these companies weather this storm that we're all in, and then also be able to grow to become the next large and mega cap stocks. And what we've seen historically is that's how it's played out. These mid-cap companies have become the next large and mega cap companies, and that growth, when you participate in it, is one thing that you really, you know, can value in your portfolio. So we think that it's, as much as anything else, we think our process works because of what we believe in, which is we're going to give you access to those quality companies within the swath of the marketplace. We're going to give you access to companies that have shown a profit, companies that have room to grow, and companies that have a little bit more value add to what they're doing day in and day out. But at the end of the day, it's as much of a, hey, you need to be in this space, and you're probably not in as deep as you need to be when you really take a step back and look at your portfolio construction.
Steve, going back to John Hancock's overall approach to the ETF market, and specifically the partnership with DFA, as I'm sure you're aware, earlier this year, DFA announced they'd be launching their own branded ETFs. I believe it's three ETFs to begin with. These will be transparent active ETFs. Does that change anything at all in terms of the longer-term relationship here with John Hancock?
You know, as of today, it doesn't. We've had, obviously, they're our partners. We've had lots of discussion with them. It looks like these, they haven't launched yet, and the filings aren't complete. But from what we can tell, these are large, and what we've talked about with them, these are more of an all-cap approach to investing. And that all-cap approach is much different than what we're focused on here, right? We're focused on a more very specific part of the marketplace. Their products historically have taken on a broader approach, and their clients that have historically accessed them take on a much broader approach to how they invest, rather than, you know, what we think the average advisor that we target and talk to is really looking for solutions with inside of each of the Morningstar boxes, if you will, and our approach will allow them to access that. So, you know, I mean, look, in today's world, you almost need to be product and wrapper agnostic. And if you've got a great process and a great strategy that you want to deliver, you want to deliver it across multiple wrappers. And we support Dimensional in their decision, and we look forward to, you know, kind of talking about the different ways that you can approach their investment style with us as a partner in some of those cases.
When you mentioned wrapper agnostic, I'm just curious, any thought given to the non-transparent active structure? Because again, when I think of John Hancock, I do think traditional active management. Mm-hmm. Has there been any consideration given to launching some of your active strategies in a non-transparent ETF wrapper, or even a transparent ETF wrapper?
Yeah, I would say we're deep in negotiations internally on those types of ideas. I would say that, we've taken a measured, thoughtful approach here, right? We're over $4 billion because we've got good distribution. We've got a thoughtful approach that hasn't asked our sales force to do too many things at once. And I think that's important. We as a firm and as people, you know, if you try to do too much too fast, I think sometimes you end up not doing anything well. And so the approach that we've taken here over the first 5 years is to really grow with one partner, think through that, make sure that we've got, you know, quote unquote, the kinks worked out. As we look to the next 5 years, Nate, I don't think there's any question that we'll see, number one, more strategies from us, new sub-advisors, and I think you'll also see more of our tradition and heritage play out with those strategies. And that is because we think that the industry is more ready than ever for that. We think that 5 years ago, I don't think that we were ready. And so when we look at where the landscape has turned, I do believe that we will participate in active strategies, and I do think it'll happen within the reasonable near term. And we think that there's, you know, whether it's fixed income, transparent active, or whether it's, you know, U.S. equity and the non-transparent wrapper, we do see value in both of those types of investment style now. And we think that the market is ready for it. And I'm not sure, like I said, 5 years ago, I don't think the market was ready, and I think the data would back us up. And look, I do think it will still be a bit of a slog for active non-transparent. I do think that we as an industry will have to prove ourselves in that wrapper. There's no free lunches in the ETF land, as you know.
That's why it's called the Terror Dome.
Exactly. So you really, you know, you got to bring your A game, whether it's, you know, in terms of fees, in terms of process, in terms of distribution. And we think that what we've learned over the last 5 years positions us to be in a great place to take these next steps and to maybe, you know, as the industry has grown and kind of tilted more towards our heritage now, we think we're in a really good spot to take advantage of that.
Just about 2 minutes left on this topic, whether we're talking quote-unquote smart beta or strategic beta, or we get into traditional active management. I'm just curious, how do you see these fitting in a portfolio longer term? Can these coexist together, or do you see strategic beta sort of taking market share away from traditional active over the long term? And I agree with you. I mean, it looks like this year there's much more emphasis being placed on active. We're seeing a lot more active ETFs come to market. But I think the other school of thought out there is that over the long term, we'll see strategic beta eat into active market share overall, whether we're talking ETFs or mutual funds. How do you see those two, sort of the interplay between the two?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things to hit on in that question, Nate. First off, I think that the ETF marketplace will continue to expand. I guess the fact that it's part of my job title makes me a little biased. But at the end of the day, that expansion, what we've seen with smart beta products is that expansion has come both from active managers, whether they be mostly mutual funds to this date, and some active ETFs, but mostly active mutual funds. But also, we've won our very fair business from traditional beta products. A lot of business, especially in the mid-cap space today, because we've had good performance. And the performance has really spoken to the client in a way that really resonates. And I think we're in a unique situation in the large cap space today where, golly, it's really been hard to beat any beta index. So I do think that we'll see expansion with the wrapper. I do believe that active will continue to grow with inside the ETF wrapper. And I do believe that the tax efficiencies that exist within both, of course, the transparent wrapper, which is the most tax efficient, but the non-transparent will continue to garner assets that are concerned about taxes. So I do think that these all can live and coexist together, and I do think that is a big part of what we're going to see over the next, we'll call it 5 years, because we're looking back as a retrospective to our last 5 years, but I think 5, 10, 15 years, I do believe that these products will coexist, because I do believe that there is a very strong perspective that advisors are putting onto their risk budget and their financial budget. And they'll find spots that they love a smart beta approach. And they'll find spots that they love a beta approach. And they're going to find spots that they love an active approach. And they're going to stop, I think, thinking so much about whether it's a mutual fund, whether it's an ETF, whether it's an SMA, if they've got clients that are big enough to participate in that marketplace. I think the wrapper is going to be less and less of an important factor, and it's more going to relate to the client's needs. Look, I'm involved in the model side of the business as well, and we've seen tremendous growth there. And we see that growth because advisors want to spend more time with their clients. They can do that by clearing the deck a little bit when it comes to investment management. Historically, they have generally thought of themselves as, hey, I'm a stock picker historically, really historically. Now I'm a fund picker, I'm an ETF picker. The reality is what most clients want is a partner in their financial health. And as that's become more and more important to the end client, the advisor has said, you know what, I need to pick a spot where I can save some time and energy. Finding a good model is a really great way to do that, because I believe in asset allocation, and I believe in, you know, in our case, what John Hancock's doing. I like their approach and what they're doing on the model management side. I'm going to take that off the shelf. I'm going to do a little bit of, you know, my own little picking around the corners. But at the end of the day, I'm going to free up time to really deliver something excellent to my client, which is service that they care about.
Well, Steve, very well said. We're going to have to leave it there. Again, a pleasure connecting. Let's not wait 5 years to do this again.
I promise we won't.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Nate. Have a great day. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I enjoy listening to the show every week. So I'll be excited to hear myself and see. Hopefully I don't sound too silly.
Thank you. That was Steve DeRoyan, head of asset allocation models and ETF product at John Hancock Investment Management.